welcome back to Mental Health Matters. And today we're doing part two on anxiety, getting ready for the very exciting lecture that's going to happen this Sunday at the library, which Rob's going to tell us all about. Rob?
Yeah, it's at 7:30 at the library. And by the way, you're listening to KRUU FM Radio 100.1, and this is Mental Health Matters with Dr. Scott Terry and Rob Hubler. And the anxiety lecture, which you just see the brochures all over town, and is 7:30 on Sunday at the library, and there's three featured speakers, Dr. Nancy Lansdorf, Dr. James Davis, and Patrick Pomfrey, who is a
full psychologist.
A full psychologist. It can be a great lecture. Those three each have their individual areas. But this, what we're talking here on the radio show, is the second part.
And me and Craig will be moderating. So I'll be moderating questions. Please bring your questions. Now, we're going to do something different this time. We're going to have everybody write down their questions. And then we'll collect the questions, try and see which ones group together and make some sense, and quickly answer some and try and have some discussion with the people who are given the lecture and me and Craig. So, go back to it, Rob.
Okay. But this part of this of our radio show, we want to kind of deal with two things, particularly anxiety, but fear and how that fits in with anxiety. And I'd just like to start off by reading from and I'm being forced to do this, by the way, reading from the DSM-5.
The Bible.
Pardon me?
The Bible.
The Bible.
In our world.
Yeah, the Bible,
sadly,
of people like Dr. Scott Terry. And but
sad.
So the definition, as given in here, is fear is the emotional response to real or perceived imminent threat, whereas anxiety is anticipation of future threat. Obviously, these two steps overlap, but they are different, with fear more often associated with surges of anatomical arousal necessary for flight or fight, thoughts of imminent danger and escape behaviors, and anxiety more often associated with muscle tension and vigilance in perception for future danger, or cautious or avoidant behaviors.
Which is really fascinating, because if you think about what's known as PTSD, or post-traumatic stress disorder, or trauma, which is no longer part of DSM-5 listed as anxiety, it's now a separate condition. Fear would be something that you're in that fight or flight. Somebody's shooting at you. You're a soldier. Somebody's shooting at you.
Or maybe shooting at you.
That's right.
Yeah, right.
But the anxiety is now the anticipation of that fear. It's almost like fear of fear. It's and that's what happens, for instance, with panic attacks, which is really striking. But we'll get into that in a second. But we all have that. And it's hard to shift out of that fight or flight mode, because it's like the brain gets stuck, our primal brain. And it really is, you could think about our brain as being a higher ordered brain and a primal brain, like we're still an animal. And we still essentially are animals, and our brains get in a groove and it gets stuck.
Yeah, the fight or flight is a good thing. I mean, you know, it's a good thing to have. It's not something that we're trying to do away with. It's just whether or not it's ruling our lives or controlling our future.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay.
And how we're getting stuck in it. So it's you know, the difference is, I tell a little story about the rabbit and the hound. Did I ever tell you this story?
No.
So real quickly, there's this rabbit in the woods, and it's happily munching along, and then all of a sudden it sees a fox. Ooh, and it's out to, and the fox is going to get him. And so the rabbit, all of a sudden, all the blood goes to its legs, and it takes off, and it's gone. And then, you know, it's then, you know, half mile down the road, and then if you'd ask that rabbit 5 minutes later, hey, what about that fox? He'd say, what do you think?
What fox?
What fox? Because there's no fox. Right, I'm looking for a lady rabbit to have some fun with, and munching on some carrots and eating somebody's garden, right? And that fox starts chasing after that rabbit, but falls in a little hole and then hurts his leg. And then if you'd ask that fox, hey, what about that rabbit? He'd go,
what rabbit?
What rabbit? Because he cares only about his leg.
God. Yeah.
Right? He doesn't care about anything else. He's working on his leg. He gets out of the hole and he moves along. Now there's this hunter coming after the fox. And it's like, oh, I'm going to get that fox now. And then he falls in that same hole. What's the difference? What does the hunter now do? If you'd ask the hunter 5 minutes later, what would he say?
Oh, I fell in the hole and hurt myself or whatever happened.
Yeah, and he'd start blaming that, oh, damn fox. Fox. And, you know,
I was chasing this fox.
And that's right. And he'd have, and if you'd ask the rabbit an hour later or 5 hours later, hey, what about the fox? He'd say, he'd look around and he'd say, hey, is there a fox around?
Yeah.
No, no fox. I'm fine. I don't care. And then if you'd ask that fox, his leg's still a little sore, you'd ask about the rabbit, and he'd go,
what rabbit?
Exactly. And that hunter who, you know, limps back to his car and goes home and talks to his wife, what's the first thing he's going to say?
I was chasing this fox and fell in a hole.
That's right. And he'd go, damn fox. Yeah, and he'd blame the fox and he'd blame the hole and he'd blame himself and he'd be all pissed. And his brain would still be wired. And the difference is the fox and the rabbit, the primal brain works in their case. And the fight or flight was a good thing. It got them going. And it turned off right away. Whereas for the hunter, it didn't. Or for the hunted, it doesn't, even when nobody's around to hunt us anymore.
Okay. Let me give you my my rabbit and fox and human being story.
Okay.
This is actually my anxiety or something that bothers me all the time.
Okay.
Talking to somebody, and if they raise their voice in potential anger or anything else, I immediately raise my voice and start going back at that person to try to take control of them. Now, I know this because I've looked at this a number of times. I know this is because as I was growing up, I was constantly attacked by my mother. And whenever I would do anything that my mother didn't like, she would yell at me. And the yelling was one thing, but many times the yelling resulted in physical punishment. So now, unbeknownst to me, in many conversations with people, people say things, and that comes up, and I immediately attack back, or as I always defend myself, saying, I am not yelling at you, I am just passionate about what I'm saying. and that's I think that's the rabbit in the, I mean, it's controlling me at the time, but it's also me trying to control the future.
That's right. And so that groove got placed in your brain.
Right.
Literally. Yes, you know, and it's like we got it. And so routines could be a good thing sometimes, but sometimes they could be a terrible thing when that groove gets stuck. And we have like what I call a brain loop, and it's going over and over and over again. And we can't get out of this. And, you know, the way that I look at things, so I do a different kind of therapy than most people. I'm what's known as a future-focused therapy. That's the word I created.
Okay.
Where I'm not to get somebody out of that trauma. And your brain is stuck in a traumatic situation, looping over and over again. It's kind of like with the dog. You don't even have to hit the dog. All you've got to do after a while is just roll the newspaper up and threaten the dog. And the dog gets that because that groove was made for that dog. How do you unleash that? And that's the interesting thing of how do you decouple that trauma, that bad event that we've all had.
Now, are you trying to erase the groove?
No. I'm trying to reshift
you can't.
It. You can redo things.
Yes.
And I do some traumatic hypnosis, for example. I do trauma hypnosis. I don't do other kinds of hypnosis, but I do trauma work. And I'm very, very cautious about doing it because essentially I'm worried if somebody's already dissociated, I don't want to dissociate them even more, which means separate their mind from their body.
Oh, okay.
Okay.
Right, fine.
When I say funny words, you need to...
I was getting ready to.
Yeah, I know. And so we have to be clear about all that. And how do you... But if somebody's already in need and they can't uncouple, sometimes you need to go in there and try something dramatic to get them out, get them unstuck, especially when the PTSD or the panic attacks are so bad that you can't do it a different way. But the work that I generally do, this future focus stuff, I'll tell you about in a second, because I'm telling you, you're listening to KRUU FM 100.1 on your FM dial and on the internet everywhere at all times. These
solar-powered radio in Fairfield, Iowa.
That's right. And you'll listen to Mental Health Matters with Dr. Scott Terry and Rob Hubler. So future-focused therapy is a different kind of direction. Instead of going back to your past and getting you to understand what happened, which is one valid approach, another valid approach is to feel the emotions that came up during those times when you think about that and decouple those emotions from it. There's many different valid approaches. And I think of a therapist with, you know, like a carpenter. I got many tools in my toolbox and what's useful to the person at that moment. One of the techniques I use is this future-focused one, which is therapy of active engagement. The focus is on what you are creating for your future now, right now. It does not mean denial or not focusing on what was, just not getting stuck there, getting lost there, and refocusing like some exposure therapy that you can't move forward. So exposure therapy is something that's drawn with traumatic situations, especially a lot of times, again, PTSD, post-traumatic stress disorder. And exposure therapy, you also do with a lot of phobias. So an example of an exposure therapy, which is another completely valid way to go about things, is, so let's say, Rob, you're afraid of heights. Okay?
Okay.
So we might be sitting in my office and I'll talk to you about, you know, what it would be like to actually go into a building that would have a high roof.
This is future focus.
No, this is exposure therapy.
Okay, all right.
And I'm going to
okay.
explain the difference why right. I'm a bit
okay.
different than this.
All right.
And I do exposure. I do everything. Again, this is just a little twist on what I do. But let's start getting the ground rules of what exposure therapy, because that's standard therapy. So exposure therapy is... So we'll start talking about it, and you'll measure a scale on 1 to 10, how anxious you get. And when it gets up to, oh, say it's getting up to 5 or 6 just talking about it, then we'll stop. You'll feel your body. You'll do what's known as a body scan from your toes to your head. You know, every muscle group you'll notice.
We won't mention that comes out of some mindfulness, but go ahead.
Yes, and it's a very useful tool
yes.
when you're in the middle of a traumatic reaction. Again, tools for what's appropriate. So when you're having an urgent situation, if you're having a heart attack, you need to have your heart shocked. If you're having the middle of a panic attack, you might need to do some mindfulness work, which is wonderful, very appropriate stuff. Focusing on your breathing, a rhythm count. For instance, one of the ones I like is a simple one from the Department of Defense. They go, breathe in for 4, hold it for 4, breathe out for 4, hold it for 4. You know, there's many kinds sometimes where you breathe in through your nose and then hold it and then breathe out longer than you breathed in.
But out your mouth.
Yes, out your mouth. Right. There's many, many techniques. Diaphragmic breathing, just breathing in and out through your diaphragm. But essentially, when you notice that you start getting anxious, before it goes over the edge, you stop and do something. A body scan, there's 3 ways to do body scans, which I love doing, where you notice every muscle group and you tense and release. So this might be the one way. So I'm going to squeeze my toes for 10 seconds, 10, 9, 8, 7, 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1, as hard as I can, and then let them go, shake them out, feel the blood flow through your feet. Then go to your calves, do the same, your thighs, do the same, your stomach, you know, all the way up, do your hands, squeeze your hands for 10 seconds, and then as hard as you can, and then let it go, and then shake. You could even do just your hands, and then all the way up to the top of your head. And then do it again, just noticing the parts of your body from head to toe, and then almost feeling like the outside, like a feather, is going from your toes to your head, but it's like an inch above your skin and just the breeze. Okay, so exposure therapy, back to exposure therapy. What you're doing is you're noticing when you start getting anxious and interrupting that signal. You're decoupling that signal. And so we might talk about it. And then what we might do is one day we'll go out, once you finally could be fully relaxed, talking about going up the elevator and actually being on top of the roof. And once you could do that, just talking about it and staying calm, then we might go to a tall building. And again, as your anxiety rises, we stop, we breathe, we refocus. And then either we keep going or we withdraw and do another session another day where we might just go up the elevator, but not even walk out of the elevator. And then another session might be we'd go out the elevator, but just stand there and not go to a window. And then
progressively more and more.
Progressively more and more, step, step,
step.
Since
this is a 30-minute program, maybe we
should. Okay. So, again, that's progressive.
Exposure therapy.
Exposure therapy, which you do with trauma work all the time. What I'm doing is going past that sort of mindfulness, which I think is a really useful tool, to creating the future possibility. What I say is start with the solution. Start with the solution today.
The solution of being where you want to be.
Where you want to be. So you have that vision of where you're going, and you start creating it today. And again,
creating
not
a
always
meeting, say, here's where I want to be, and I'm going to begin to do these things in order to get
and
there.
And I have that vision.
Okay.
It's like when you're goal setting, you start with the vision first, then you go to the goals, then the game plan, and then what to do. So what I do with the vision, with this future focused, is I move from being just being present to today, and I seek inspiration and possibility in that vision of who you are, the goals that you're creating, what you're doing, and the game plan to get it done. And you bring it to now and how you're actually going to do it with the action steps.
Make a plan
and follow it through. The concreteness of when, where, why, what's next. And you're making it real of what that solution is today. So you're backing it up. The power comes back to your power comes by regaining sense of self-control. So I will talk to everybody about exercise, meditation, diet, sleep. And yes, those in themselves are very useful tools. But the real reason why I talk to everybody is if I'm exercising, it's not just the exercise. The real reason, my hidden agenda for exercise is not just that 30 minutes of intensity, which will change your brain chemistry. It's also that you are fully aware of your body now, and even more so, you are choosing to take control.
Okay. All right.
All right. So we move from the necessity of what somebody is doing, not what they're saying they're going to do, not what they're feeling, but to act on those thoughts and feelings and move through them today. One moves from what one is experiencing without judgment or denial, without guilt or remorse, without getting lost in what one experiences, and just being honest without the overlay of meaning that you're attaching to things. With the experience, without this denial or pain that you had to be in, we move into what we have made it mean in the past to what we are choosing, really choosing now to make it mean. That future,
in the future, you mean?
Yeah. But that future that we're living today, that future focus that we're bringing into this moment and to the action of today that we're choosing and we're getting, we're the ones who chooses. And then in a positive, we create then a positive feedback loop. Instead of thinking about it more, we're creating a positive feedback loop because we're acting on who we are.
And we take a look at what that action does for us.
Absolutely.
That's the feedback?
Yes.
Okay.
And then we reflect on what we're experiencing now in this new light, this new possibility of what we can create for ourselves today, as well as what we're creating inside us and also around us, and what we are choosing to put in place. It's the moment from shifting experience now to awareness without this overlay of judgment and shame and guilt and remorse to one of choice. Our choice that we are coming to take control over what we have been experiencing all along. power doesn't come from awareness, greater awareness, or greater meaning. It comes through the action over thought and awareness and meaning.
Okay, well, and so how do you know what you're choosing to do? By the way, you're listening to KRUU FM 100.1 on your radio dial, solar powered radio in Fairfield, Iowa, and this is Mental Health Matters with Dr. Scott Carey. Terry, how do you tell what you choose and from your feedback is the correct thing or incorrect, whichever?
You know, the analogy is when you're in a ship, you can't move it if it's not moving. You can't move a car unless it's going somewhere. You start and you get feedback. Oh, it's working, it's not. You got to start somewhere.
Okay, what does working mean? Working is, what I'm getting to, I mean, does it mean it's pleasure to you?
Or no, it's not what? Pleasure. It's that your life is actually growing. You're actually moving forward. You're evolving. Some things aren't pleasurable. We get anxious. Things happen. Sure. God, they happened to me today in spades. You know, things happen. It's what we create from it. And then we come back to our awareness and our meaning, our experience, what we're processing, what we're making things mean, and we do something different with it. But we have to start somewhere. So that doesn't invalidate other avenues, for instance, going back to the past and revisiting it, as many people do, or what you're feeling, as many therapists do. That all has its perfectly good place, as I sometimes do. It's just saying that sometimes we also have to look at what we're willing to create for our future today and start moving forward instead of thinking about it more, feeling it more. The trap I think a lot of people get into is, if I only feel this more, then I'd be better. And it's like, no, now you're stuck in your emotions. If I only think about my problem more, then I'll get out of my problem. Well, sometimes that works, and sometimes you got to let go of your problem enough to move forward. Sometimes thinking about more keeps you stuck in your head.
Sure, yeah.
And thinking about something more doesn't get you out of thinking about it more. Sometimes right. It just, you get in a negative feedback loop, and you're creating another groove in your brain. So that's another way to think of it. So when we're having a panic attack, there's a lot of different, or any kind of anxiety issue, there's a lot of ways to address it. And I don't mean to confuse things. It's really about you finding a way that works for you. The biggest point was not the exercise, for example, or the mindfulness that you get from that, or whatever it is. It's the choice that you're making. And for instance, that's why I like transcendental meditation better than a mindfulness long term, so that we don't have that heart attack again, so that we don't have that anxiety condition. But it's not the tool in and of itself. It's our choice. It's our way of taking control of our lives that gives us our power. And so that it's how we apply our tools that makes them good. Okay. The answer is no longer about good or bad. It's about, does it work for me or does it not?
Or pleasure or unpleasure.
Absolutely.
Or pain and suffering or whatever. But
you know, going to the dentist sometimes isn't a pleasurable experience. But you know, you still do something to create something more powerful.
Where are we?
23.
Okay. Let me take, if I can, one step back from that. I came to Fairfield as a non-meditator.
Mm-hmm.
And all my friends I picked up here, good or bad, were meditators.
Mm-hmm.
And so after a while, I decided, you know, if everybody's a meditator and they all, not all, but a lot of them are getting benefit from this, maybe I ought to become a meditator. Mm-hmm. So I did. My point is that a lot of times in our own personal lives, we feel, and particularly with fear, we feel so lonely and so alone and that we're the only bad person in the world and that nobody else knows that we're bad, that one of the chief aspects for me is getting around people who share and understand my feelings so that I can seek other help, because I could get to a therapist. But I first have to go to a group or have people around me who say, you know, you're all right, and we understand how you feel, and we understand.
And you're not alone.
You're not alone. You know,
But the first point was not going out. The first point was making the choice in your head to go out. The first choice was to get over the fear enough so that you could start doing something. It's that initial, you don't have to know the answer.
That's right. Okay, I'll
agree. You just have to decide, I don't want to have this anymore.
Right.
I want things to be better. I want things really to be better. I want the game to stop. It's not that we all get stuck in whatever pain we're feeling, social anxiety or whatever it is. We all get stuck in our heads, and it's like letting go just a moment, right? Just a moment so I could breathe.
Right.
And come back to, what do I want to create? I don't have to have the answer, but I do need to know that I want things to be different, and I'm willing to take the risk. Because if you don't try, then nothing happens. If the boat isn't moving, you can't turn it one way or the other way. You'll know. Trust yourself. And you might have to learn how to trust yourself anew, in a new way. That's okay. You're not five anymore. Life's changed, and you're free now. And so, Rob, I would say to you, you're free now. Apart from, you know, you have that memory of that fear from what, you know, mom yelling at you.
Right.
But
right.
She's not here today. And we could go into, yes, she probably wasn't trying to hurt you. I'm sure it was out of love, but she didn't know how to express that love in a way that worked for you.
Right. That first step, very important step. And by the way, we can all take that first step on February, on this coming Sunday, at the library at 7:30 will be an anxiety lecture, in which would be a first step and find out some of these things about anxiety, what they are, and the availability of people in the community. And it could be a first step for a lot of people.
And the first step is just deciding, I'm going to get out my door and try.
Right.
You don't have to have the answer.
This is a free lecture.
Oh, yeah, I like free. And do come with your questions. Write your questions down clearly and legibly, because I'm not very good at reading it.
What else do we need to do here? We got 2 minutes to go?
We do indeed. Well, you know, there's certainly so many other conditions we could talk about specifically, but I think what's really important is just finding an avenue that works for you. And that really works. Again, the point is that, you know, if it's a panic attack or just some generalized anxiety of something that's going on in our lives, again, the shift really is that first step. I'm taking control. I'm not in denial about what's going on. I'm wanting to choose to do something better. And so you try. There is no wrong. Mistakes are how we learn. If you don't make a mistake, you never would have gotten to where you are today.
That's right.
Look in the mirror right now, and you'll get it, who you really are.
I have, just to finish up here, tips to manage anxiety and stress, and I'll just read off the bullet points. Taking time out, pausing, eating well-balanced meals, limiting alcohol and caffeine. That's a big one for me.
Oh, yeah.
Getting enough sleep. That's another big one for me.
Yep.
Exercise. I'm doing that. Taking deep breaths. I'm doing that constantly. Counting to 10. Do your best instead of trying to achieve perfection. That's a great one. Accepting the fact that you cannot control everything. I don't believe that for a minute. Welcome humor, which is, I think, one of the greatest things in my family that I learned, was that humor was really a great thing to have. Maintaining positive attitude, getting involved, learning what triggers your anxiety, talking to someone, I think, is really, that's the last one on there, but one of the really great ones there.
Well, again, don't be alone.
Right.
When we're, again, a lot of times when we're feeling bad, we almost want to make it worse, to feel it even more. Right. And it's like, no. When you're in a hole, stop digging. It's time for change. It's time for your life to work.
And it's time to wrap up the program.
Thank you, everyone. We'll talk to you next week.